So we now have a panel on the future of media, but specifically how startups can interface with corporates and what some of the challenges are. So if I could ask the panelists to come up, please. I think there are four people I'm looking for. There's Nico Vescher from the German Media Pool, Niall Duffy from Mediasmiths, Valentin Schöndienst from Proud Magazine, and Christoph Kieser from Axel Springer. Hello, how are you? Nice to see you again.
How are you?
Take a seat anywhere you like.
How you do? Nice to meet you. Hi.
Hey, what's up?
Hi.
Anyway, like, there we go. There's a microphone. Do we have, yes, extra? Yes. Good. Wonderful. Okay. I think we're just four. Okay, so thank you so much for coming. Let's start with Christoph. Why is it so hard for startups to work with big media groups and with corporates?
I don't know if it's really hard. I mean, we're here, we're around, we are approachable. So if startups have ideas, just give us a call and let's look into it. Maybe it's a bit harder for media companies to work with startups, because one thing media companies tend to do is integrate ideas, business, and make them departments. And this is probably not a good idea with startups. What you should give to startups is a longer leash. They need to be creative. They need to keep a certain distance, but they should not be all the way out, because there is synergies to be found. And so the big trick is, and this is what we are trying to do, is keep them at a comfortable length. So just approach us.
What should a startup know if they want to come and to work with you or to meet with you? Are there a couple of things that you're really looking for, and a few things that some startups think you're looking for that you're not? I mean, what are your objectives when interfacing with this community?
Well, basically, we're looking for two things. First of all, we would love to have them take a fresh look at our business model and find new ways of more efficiency in our existing business model. How can you make content work better? How can you make marketing work better? How can you make classifieds work better? But at the same time, this would be the second point, it would be great to have people wanting to destroy our business. Disruptive, innovative change. This is very important, because much of what's happening these days is disruptive innovation, which means coming up with a plan to destroy somebody else's business. So people all over the world are working on disruptive approaches to what we're doing today. So we would rather have these people closer to us, so we can somehow profit. Andreas Wiele mentioned Kaufda. Kaufda's approach is disruptive. What they're trying to do is basically kill off the supplement that players like MediaMarkt or Saturn are putting into newspapers. They're trying to pull this out of newspapers and put it on the internet with a whole new business model. This is disruptive. And we would rather have this happen within our own company than being hit by it and only knowing it afterwards what happened.
So one of the ways that small businesses are working with larger businesses, whether they're media or advertising, is entirely new models of investment. And Nico, you are spearheading one of these. It's a very exciting new model of VC fund. Maybe you could, I'm sure most people know what you're up to, but maybe you could just summarize it very briefly and perhaps explain how that helps these companies to get to know each other.
Sure, Milo. We are the founders of Germany's first independent media for equity fund. That means that we're like a type of venture capital firm, but we do not invest cash, we invest media. We're completely cashless. And we are an interface between three large media groups on the one side, who have provided us with several millions of media inventory, and startups on the other side, at the moment, eight portfolio companies, who we've provided media for growth, so they can realize some very large advertising campaigns with this media. And we get equity stakes in these companies in exchange. So it's like a venture capital fund, but a cashless venture capital fund.
How do these sort of new ways of working help these companies to get to know one another? I mean, you're presumably kind of fast-tracking the process here, where you immediately get startups who have access to much larger companies than they would normally be able to get services from. That's pretty exciting, isn't it? I mean, you know, effectively you get tech startups who are able to pay for billboards. That would never happen otherwise.
Well, you know, it's really funny. I thought I was in a venture capital business, and actually I'm in the education business. What we're doing is we're helping media companies get to know each other. So the media groups that we're working with never had much contact with each other before we started this fund. They're in completely different media segments, so they didn't have to until they started working together with us. And on the other side, the startups have very little knowledge about offline media and about advertising campaigns. How do you set up a media plan? What is good media? What's bad media? You know, how much should media be, for example, discounted? Is it an 80% discount or is it a 20% discount? I mean, there's a huge amount of information gap on both sides, and we're very excited to be basically in the middle of this, trying to help both sides get to know each other.
So, Valentin, you are the creative director, is that right, for your magazine. Have you tried to work with any large media companies, and what was your experience?
Okay, so I'm with Proud, and we actually started off as a print magazine, and now we're an ad agency as well. And so from our ad agency business, we work a lot with large corporations. So we know that they are really slow, and it takes time for them to, like, try out new stuff. And obviously, I see the same thing in the publishing industry. Mm-hmm. So as a magazine, we know all the issues around generating content, distributing content, monetizing content, and I have had a lot of respect for everyone in the industry who figured out a way to make money there, and that obviously includes Axel Springer. But what I see right now, like in terms of like becoming part of the startup ecosystem and that kind of stuff, I'm afraid that there's a systematic problem here, because Philip, you mentioned synergies, and in theory, of course, there are a lot of synergies. So you have like these big corporations which are always slow and they cannot invent, and you have like these fast startups which are inventing. Most of them are crap, I guess, but still, I mean, at least what they do is fast. And if you talk about synergies, that means that both parties have to bring like the best of both worlds to the table. And from what I see so far is that not so much that the small startups are actually speeding up the processes in the large corporations. It feels to me it's more the other way around. It's more that like the large corporations are actually slowing down the startups. So I'm relatively skeptical about like big corporations and working and startups working together, at least in an early stage where the startup is still small.
Okay, Niall, you presumably have a good overview of this sort of thing. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I'd completely agree. I mean, I've seen both sides of this, having worked for a number of large companies, including IBM, and having also done a startup. And I think as a startup, you have to view a large corporation as basically a psychopathic entity, because it doesn't actually care about you. And that's the way it should be, by the way. That's right and proper, because that's why it has shareholders. And I think the biggest single lesson I learned about being a startup was being partner manager in IBM, where I used to advise all of our tiny technology partners to treat us as a customer. So you have to sell into us. You have to make our life easy. And if you do that, then we will bring you into the fold. And very often, startups do, unfortunately, what I think Philip said earlier, which is the last thing you should do is go in with a good idea. The first thing you should do is go in and find out how you can either make someone their money or how you can make their life easier, and learn how to deal with an organization that moves at the speed of treacle. And if you can do all of those, then you are much more likely to be successful in dealing with a corporate. And just lastly on that one, you also really need to think about why you want to deal with a corporate. And generally speaking, there is one good reason, which is it is probably the single fastest way of getting to a level of scale that you wouldn't normally get to, but you have to bear in mind there's a price associated with that.
Psychopathic entity, is that right?
That's kind of right, and I just want to add to the point that these two gentlemen made, because I think it's very important. It's basically trading scale versus speed, and speed is very important. And the big company is not supposed to slow down the speed. Let me give you one example. I attended the TechCrunch hackathon last year in San Francisco. They meet at 12 on Saturday, and they are starting like a marathon competition. And they have 24 hours to program a complete website and show it the next day. 24 hours later, one group presented a new car radio system. They got the new console. It's a big screen that goes down all the way for a new generation of cars from General Motors. It's this big. And they programmed a Spotify radio onto this middle console. Touchscreen, voice controlled, Spotify API, fully functional after 24 hours on a weekend. Here, or in big companies, they don't even work on weekends. We would need more than 24 hours just to fill out the form to ask the IT department to look into the project. Budgeting would take probably half a year, and the whole discussion about whether or not to venture into this field would take another year. These people program it in one single day. This is very impressive. No PowerPoints, no extra charge, just the pure product. And their slogan is, code is poetry. And this is what we as big companies need to learn from. This is why we're looking for entrepreneurs. We give them scale, they give us speed.
But did it get implemented?
Excuse me?
Did it get implemented?
I don't know. I didn't follow up on the story, because, but I was I mean, probably not.
The problem isn't ideas. Ideas are great. And I was at a startup festival, a kind of a South by Southwest in the north of Ireland, if you can try and picture that, which isn't easy. And ideas are not the problem. It's execution is the problem. And you can get, and the example you just gave, well, yeah, corporates get really excited. I don't mean to be disrespectful. Corporate gets really excited when they see things they can't do. You know, and in a large corporate, it's really difficult to get things done quickly. However, in a large corporate, it is possible to get things done properly. And that's why they're successful. And it's for me that it's the long game on this. It's actually getting the good idea and getting it executed. And that's where I think the scale and the experience from a large corporate can benefit the startup.
You're absolutely right. They perfectly fit. And getting this kind of radio, I'm missing a Spotify radio on my Audi. I would love to have it. And when you talk to Audi people, I don't want to hurt anybody, but as far as I know, they're not really working on the problem. So if they were to pick up the idea and maybe the code and started integrating it in their car, doing what they do best, I think this could be a good fit.
Tell us about some of the publications that you found most exciting, excluding your own, in the last couple of years. The ones that you think, if you take the view that that hooking up with big media groups is likely to slow you down, likely to introduce people and processes that are going to hold you back, presumably instead you would have some ideas about what the media company of the future looks like, one that can grow organically on its own. What kind of companies have you been excited by? What kind of publications, for example?
The Kernel, of course.
Thank you.
No, but so, well, I cannot really say what I'm particularly excited about publication. What I see is like, I mean, the trend is more the other way around, right? Is that you're not like follow a particular publication. It's more that you have a stream, mm-hmm. and it's in a way curated, and so you get content from all kind of sources. So that's also pretty much the way I consume content, and I think that's the way it's gonna be. I would like to quickly follow up of the discussions you just had. And so with your corporate background, what you said, like what you need to do is you need to bring value to the table, right? And you need to make a company's life easier, make them earn money, save money, whatever it is. But I don't think, like if that is true, and I don't so much doubt it, but if that is true, then there's no way you can disrupt anything in a business. Like in someone else's business. And just from my personal experience, I can say it's really, like, we're talking really high level here, but what really comes down to is I think you have to make some particular person in a big company shine. I mean, that's really what it's about. So it's not so much, is it good for the company? Is it good for the market? To me, it's all crap, because you have to make someone go out there, push your project through, and that guy has to be like a big star in the company and go on management meetings and be the cool guy there, and that's the way to go, and there's no other way around it.
Nico, I think you wanted to come in.
Yeah, I wanted to say from the corporate perspective, it's not just technologies and startups that are interesting, and there is a risk that maybe big media companies get focused too much on this kind of sexy startup space. One of the most surprising successes in Germany in the past couple of years was a conventional print magazine called Landlust. And this is just a huge market, and you know, nobody thought of that before. Nobody basically had the initiative to start this out, and it's a completely conventional print magazine. So I think that we forget sometimes that there is an offline world out there, that there's still a lot of money to be made there, and a lot of emotion and excitement. And this is important too, and it's not all revolving around the startups.
Have you seen anybody in the more traditional print space you've been excited by in the last 6 months?
Absolutely, Landlos is a good example, but there are exciting things like the new Wired in Germany, for example. Give it another try and try to establish Wired on this market. Didn't
they
work.
They seem to do that a lot in every market.
I know.
It's only the US one ever survives for very long.
It's kind of repetitive, but why is it, Nico? Why is it that publishing houses are so excited about startups? Because we come from a linear world, we don't come from an exponential world, so our business is, our scalability is always linear, and we have not been in the business of exponential scalability. And this is what is so exciting, having something that is really scalable, and that's what's so exciting about our companies and the companies we invested in, that once they reach the break-even point, margins become possible that are simply never been dreamed of in the traditional world. So scalability is a whole new way of approaching business. But it also, it's a form of art. You need to understand what scalability is all about. And we need to learn about it. I think we're pretty good at it, but we can learn even more. This is what we're taking away from, this is why it's so exciting.
Niall, is that realistic? Do content businesses really scale like that? Can they shoot up as rapidly as a platform tech business?
I don't know. I can't help thinking that sounds to me a lot like gambling, which is there's an element of almost we want this to be there, and I think we've all been there. A lot of us don't do a proper pre-mortem when we look at business ideas. I know when I joined my .com, I certainly, 10, 15 years ago, I certainly didn't think through it properly because I was swayed by how quickly I was going to make a lot of money in an immensely scalable business. I think compared to publishing, I think you're right. I mean, we sometimes get a bit too preoccupied with publishing in the declining margins. There's a core capability there which will definitely last in the new world. The new world does have certain economies of scale and scope, which I think if you can tap into and get right, they look like phenomenally profitable businesses. It's the getting it right bit, and I think too many people kind of forget some general rules in media, which is production values tend to be quite closely associated with audiences. The more money you put into content, the more people will value it. And I think there's sometimes too much of a belief that, if we can just get something up and running quickly, it will grow independently of the content that's driving it.
So why are so many media groups investing in second-rate technology and churning out vast volumes of substandard copy and content if it's clear that, by producing better quality, better curated, polished products, that people will reward them with their dollars? Why is almost every media group going the other way?
Well, I think there's two reasons for that. One is, for the most part, when it comes to digital media, most of them don't actually know what they're doing. And they're approaching it from a very old world point of view without even fully appreciating some of the economics of it. I think the ones who get it right are the ones who see how it fits with the existing business. The one at the moment which kind of gets me is YouTube has announced that they're putting, in the US it was $100 million, in the UK it's £10 million into creating something like 20 channels. And MIP.com, everyone got really excited about this, old TV is dead and this is the future. £10 million is nothing. It's absolutely nothing. It's 10 hours of high-quality content on TV, and this is going to allegedly drive 20 channels. So that just stands out as someone who does not know what they're doing in the world of content.
Sure. I would like to put a problem in front of you just to illustrate what the challenges are. We all know when you live in a city, you are somewhat interested in the city's affair. You're very much interested in world affairs and national affairs, but you're very interested in your immediate surroundings, your street and the block you live in. There's no way in the traditional publishing economy that you can ever hope to fund editors covering one street. It simply does not work. But if you want coverage of this one street or this one block, you need to find other ways, scalable businesses, to have people put quality content on your website. Otherwise, the content will not be there. So you need to incentivize people. How can you incentivize people? They can do it for fame. They could be interested in their community affairs. They could be making it for money. I don't know. There are first steps taken here. There are first steps taken in America. One project is called everyblock.com. And this project is really interesting simply for its name. I don't know if it's ever going to work, but for its name. Because in a block in New York City, you have 10,000 people living there. You have bakeries, you have shops. There is a microeconomy that has not been covered by traditional publishing, and it will never be covered because there's no way the New York Times can ever afford a print journalist under its existing tariffs covering this one block. So this is a task put in front of you, young entrepreneurs, how to solve this problem. Meet, match markets. People wanting to read stories from their immediate surroundings and a non-existing functional business model today. This is one of the problems that needs to be solved.
Do you use any user-generated content? Are you bullish about it? Are you skeptical about it? I mean, a lot of the big media companies seem to see it as an easy route to page views that they can't monetize. But it seems to run slightly counter to this idea of creating, you know, beautiful professional content.
So, like, my perspective, like, come from having an ad agency and a magazine and also a startup. And it's funny what you just said, because the startup that we're about to launch is doing exactly that. And probably Axel Springer is going to be a part of it. So that's good. So, but if it comes to user-generated content, I'm not very bullish about it in general. Like, you see, like, in advertising, you see all these marketing managers, and they say, like, well, we need to do something with user-generated content, but the thing about it is so uncontrollable, like, it really never works out, and at the end of the campaign, you have to fake the whole shit to, like, get the result that the people want to see. Yeah. So, judging from that experience, like, I'm not very bullish about it. When the thing is, I have a... Like, it's really hard to plan it out. Like, if it works, but it's really hard to plan for it. So businesses who start out, like, say, okay, we built our whole business on user-generated content, like, I'm not so bullish about it. If it works, great, but it's so difficult to create a community out of thin air. Mm-hmm. And I would say out of, like, 10,000 who try, maybe one makes it. So if it works, it's great, but it's hard to create it.
There's user-generated content and there's user-generated content. So there are many examples of where it actually really works, where if people are given an environment which functions, for example, gaming. I mean, most games that are played online today, 90% is user-generated content. For example, a dictionary that I've invested in called Lingui.com is entirely user-generated dictionary in many languages. So there are examples where it works, and I think this is very exciting what you just mentioned, because the challenge is there. How do you create a framework that will actually make it work and not just basically give up before we even start just by saying it's bad anyway?
And one idea, it's completely not thought through, but I was struck by the beauty of the idea. The statistics show that over the past 10 years, over 10,000 journalists in the United States have lost their jobs. They were simply fired because their companies went down or scaled back. The idea was have a website called fire.com, where you have these people write. They're out of work, they have probably working as taxi drivers or something, but they're yearning to be back in business, to write again. Why not give them a platform? Invite them to write. And the same is true in all markets in the world. There are professionals out of work right now doing other things. Why don't them give them a platform and produce them much better user-generated content? I don't know if it's going to work, but I think, or there must be some idea to solve that kind of problem or market.
So, I mean, content generation is one thing, and I completely agree what you guys just said, but I mean, the big issue we all know is making money out of it, right? And, okay, if you're talking World of Warcraft, that's one thing, but even if you have, I mean, it's so easy to find something entertaining online, so, I mean, people paying for content, I just don't see it. I must say, like, I mean, you guys try to, like, put a paywall in front of some stuff, so that's cool. I will be very impressed if that works out. And so if you talk about creating content and distributing content, I think there's still a lot of innovation out there that can be done, but where it's needed is in monetizing content, and I don't see many ways to go about it these days. I mean, even content like Quora, which is really good stuff. I mean, I love to read that. I mean, try to compete with that kind of content and make people pay for it, especially when you're like, I would say Axel Springer is more like in the entertainment business rather than like, yeah, other kind of journalism. And entertainment is so cheap and there's so much stuff out there on the web, so it's going to be a hard thing to do, I think.
Niall and Nico, let's talk very briefly about the technology. We'll start with Nico. So you've both worked for a big corporate, the same one, in fact. You both worked for IBM, right?
That's right.
I asked Andreas earlier what he thought the big technological challenge is. What do you think it is?
I think the biggest technological challenge is not a technological challenge. It's about the business models, and it's about making, for example, monetization work. Apple became a huge company not by inventing any technology, but by putting together technologies in a smart way. Realizing what's out there, what is smart, putting it together. We have all the technology that we need right now to build the most amazing things, and we haven't even scratched the surface yet. I think enabling technologies is difficult within large corporations, and so you need smart people to do it, but the technology itself is not the challenge.
I kind of half agree and half disagree. I think a large part of what we as a company do is assemble existing technologies. Now, you know, if we do that better and smarter than someone else, is that technology or is that business? I don't know. I think a lot of it is kind of not great technology with a great business model can make you a lot of money. But on the other hand, in many respects, I can't help thinking that we're almost in the dark ages when it comes to a lot of technology. I was asked a question in a previous panel, you know, what would you really want from technology? I want technology to know what I'm thinking. I want it to know what I want. And right now, I'm hoping Google is going to do that quite shortly. But in the absence of that, we need better search and discovery technology. We need, I hate the expressions big data because it's big companies marketing in the way that only they know how. But actually, we need better technology that can see patterns and relate them to what we want. And currently, that technology is in its infancy. And that's what I see as the main technology challenge, is being able to better analyze and fit to what we want to do.
Okay, so to wrap up before you guys get to go and do your workshops and hands-on stuff, I'd like to ask everybody on the panel of a person or a business in this space that you have been really taken with and what you'd like to see happen to it over the next couple of years. So maybe if we could start with you and Niall at the end, putting you on the spot, I realize.
Okay. Well, I think it's us.
well, tell us what you that's fine. So tell us what you want to, where you want to go over the next couple of years.
I kind of see a distinction between, there's the B2B world, which is the world we play in, and in many respects it's unsexy but actually the most exciting area, and it is actually precisely companies like us, people who see the old world and respect it as well as understand where the new world can go. On the consumer side, I actually get a little bit depressed going forward because I don't see some of those companies. I see the likes of Facebook kind of becoming the new Medici of the Renaissance, which is they've now got so big they can just hoover up ideas just for the sake of being big. So it's there where I'm hoping someone new and genuinely disruptive is going to emerge, but I haven't seen that yet.
So one particular thing that we're excited about is that, it's funny that you said it, Philip, really, because it's really something we're working on, is that we want, like, our mission and what we do now is, like, we want to get people to know the neighborhood better. And so that is something that we'll be working on, and of course we need to find a way to make it sustainable. So we need to earn money with that. So, like, we can go, like, 1 or 2 years in without, like, making any revenue, but the big... I'm 100% sure that we will build a great product that people will use. I have no doubt about that. But the big challenge is to find a business model in that, and that's something I would like to see for the future.
The best technology I saw over the past years is Dropbox. And I think it's one of the best business models as well, because they're selling the storage in the cloud at a premium of like 20, factor 20 of the price you can buy your own hard disk at home, simply for the advantage of having it distributed on all your machines. But the editorial thing that struck me most is The Verge, the website. I really like it. It's a cool design. It's great content. It's really to the point. And what I am hoping for is that more money and more entrepreneurial vision goes into content on the web. This is the one territory that's completely uncharted. People shy away because they say content doesn't really work on the web. So we have all these legacy brands which are successful but not making as much money as they should, but there's very little investment and vision in great, striking content on the web. It will work, and this is the new frontier we have to cross. We should cross.
Nico.
I'm very excited about the interface between internationalization and web business models. So I'm excited about the entrepreneurs that are able to take an internet business model, roll it out into all of these white spaces, whether it's Indonesia, whether it's Brazil, whether it's China. There are some media companies that have done that really well, for example, Schibsted. There are some European entrepreneurs that have done that really well, like Stefan Uhrenbacher with Nine Flats. There's Oliver Zamva, who's done it really well with Rocket Internet. But we have to think of not just the business models, but also the internationalization aspect of the internet. And if you can combine those two, then you really have some thing that's very exciting.
Thank you very much. I think that's been a useful and interesting way to set up the rest of the day. So please thank you to everybody who's made time for us on our panel. I'm going to hand back over to Ulian Jan. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming.